Hello everyone, and welcome to another Charity Digital podcast. I am back once again, Nick Wyatt, the Growth Marketing Executive of Charity Digital, and I am so glad to have you with us today. Shh, can you hear that?
What?
Sleigh bells. And what's that smell? Yes, that's pine and mulled wine on the nose. Yes, it's that time again, Christmas. Tis the most wonderful time of the year, and tis the most wonderful time to talk about fundraising, actually. To kick this off, I want to say some words from my esteemed guest here, Laura Stanley. Whenever we get gloomy with the state of the world, we think about the people who donate to charities. General opinion is starting to make out that we live in a world of hatred and greed, but we don't see that. It seems to us that generosity is everywhere. Often it's not particularly newsworthy, but it's always there. Even now, in the middle of the cost of living crisis, donations to charity remain strong. Whether they are running marathons or responding to a Christmas appeal, people are finding ways to raise money for charity. If you look for it, I've got a sneaky feeling that fundraising actually is all around. In this podcast, we're going to look at the different ways charities have raised money, the appeals that have made an impact, and the fundraising techniques that have made a difference. And because it's December, and in December, you make too many references to the seminal classic, Love Actually, we want to say, without a hope or an agenda, a big thank you to charities who've weathered the crisis and made an impact on those they serve. The dynamic duo are back to support me once again. Welcome a real Mrs. Claus herself, Laura Stanley, and the real-life Ebenezer Scrooge, Ewan Mark Jones. Hello to the both of you.
Hello. I'd like to note that he asked me how to spell Ebenezer earlier.
I did. And pronounce.
That's very bar humbug of you, Ewan, if you don't mind me saying.
Let's move on. Can we wrap this up?
I really wanted to get bar humbug in and I didn't, so I'm so glad you said that. Anyway, to the topic at hand, I want to kick it off this way. So earlier this year, both of you guys sat down and wrote an article about fundraising trends you thought you'd see in 2022. Let's start here. What of those trends have you seen really come into truth? And do you have any really good examples for either of them? Not either of them.
Yeah, I mean, one that I think is worth noting, some of the ones that have and some of the ones that actually haven't met expectations. Mm-hmm. I think hybrid events didn't.
I agree.
For example, talked a lot at the beginning of the year about how hybrid events are just going to be almost a given, that we're going to see everyone go back to physical events, which we have seen, thankfully, mm-hmm. and it's been great, but we haven't seen the hybrid elements. And I think we're a bit guilty of that ourselves. In our event, we lack the hybrid and we're thinking of ways to do that. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the reasons that is just because people don't have the know-how, even though they ran virtual events, they ran physical events in the past and have done that traditionally. I don't think they have the know-how to combine the two. And I think that actually stumps a lot of people, I think. Another one that actually has turned out a lot, another trend that I noted that turned out a lot weirder is social media. So I said it was obviously going to grow and it remains key to increasing outreach. But I couldn't have expected the things that happened. I mean, it goes back quite a long way now, but Facebook hit serious reputational damage with some of the things they did, particularly around privacy. Whistleblowers are basically... highlighted some of the failings they had, especially around safeguarding of children, safeguarding of teenagers. And Metaverse almost made that switch. And it's funny because one of the reasons I think they changed to Meta is essentially to distance themselves from the brand of Facebook. And it's worked, strangely. charities are now talking about how to get on the Metaverse and so on and so forth. So that will be interesting for 2023. But also, again, Twitter is having all sorts of problems. Instagram's having a lot of problems, which obviously comes under Meta, but nonetheless. So those big ticket, those big traditional, easy fundraising options of social media, I would say haven't actually been as important. And charities need to consider them. They need to consider their lasting relationships with those brands. So we often talk about social media in terms of TikTok and Snapchat and these things. Why don't you get involved in these or Be Real or whatever new one's coming up this month? And ultimately, a lot of it is we talk about getting involved in new ones, but not distancing yourselves from old ones. And I think finally, I mean, I'll stop talking now because I've gone on for a bit. But I think finally, charities really do need to reconsider their relationship with some of the big traditional social media giants.
Yeah. Just to jump in before you take over, Laura, I just want to let the audience know what those themes were, just because I felt like I should have done that earlier. But essentially, as you alluded to earlier, the key things we thought were going to dominate the fundraising landscape this world were hybrid events, social media being equally as important as in the past, gaming for good, email marketing still being a big importance, embracing artificial intelligence, and also digital fundraising become the norm out of all the fundraising channels. Mm-hmm. So what are those of you seen really come into fruition then, Laura?
That's a very good question. Can I go back and add something about hybrid events?
Go. Okay. Ho, ho.
So we actually had a really great speaker at our Be More Digital conference in June.
I thought you were going to say 2022, and I was like, yes, it was this year.
It was in 2022. Mind were talking about their Move for Mind event that they held in the pandemic. And they combined social media, actually, because over the pandemic, Facebook fundraising became 50% of their income portfolio. And obviously, moving out of the pandemic, that's no longer the case, and they found it wasn't sustainable. So I think what was valuable, I think there's been, I remember I talked to one charity professional and they said 2022 was almost a trial and error year because stuff that worked in 2020 is no longer working. And so you think that challenge events and hybrid events are this big trend, but actually people are busy now. People actually have plans. So people don't want to get involved in the same way that they did back in 2020 when they were craving connection and all this stuff. So there's a lot of user research having to go into place, I think. But there are so many steps with that Facebook fundraising helps with. It creates a frictionless journey. It's the gap between making the decision to fundraise and asking for funds. The longer that is, the harder it is to start. And Facebook does reduce those steps. So there are still plenty of positives to take from Facebook fundraising. There's an automatic community there, but I don't think we're seeing charities utilize it in quite to the full extent yet. I'm not sure how many UK charities are signed up to Facebook fundraising. And if to make the most of it, you have to be signed up so that when people want to fundraise on Facebook, they can click onto it. So I think it still needs finessing, that whole relationship. Yeah. But so I would say hybrid events, it's not over, but it needs
to continue.
Yeah, exactly.
People need to address it.
There's so many positives from them, isn't there? Like geographical location, you overcome that. Accessibility, that's really important. So I think it just needs... I would say it was a correct trend, but it's just we're seeing
it's not coming to fruition properly.
Exactly.
I think that's a really good point you make there about the trial and error aspect, because you're right. This is the first. I know COVID is still a thing, obviously today, but it's not its impact on society that it once was. And this year was the first year, predominantly the whole first year, where we saw people adjusting to the new life. So a lot of it is going to be trial and error. I think that's a really good point. And things like hybrid events, as lots of technology involved in that, which is pretty tricky to use.
Exactly.
So I think we'll definitely see more of it in the future. And I think it's one of those that is a trial and error, not just for the sector, but for individuals, if it's worth its use.
Yes, yeah.
But
exactly.
There's definitely, I think there was definitely more people trying to include different things.
Yeah,
like,
I agree.
You know, there was definitely sort of things like some sessions that were being live streamed, but they weren't being properly nurtured. I think that's the key thing here. But then again, also, it's not everyone to make an event totally hybrid, like one or the other. It's just more having a few little features here and there.
That's what I think. And I think that's a failure, ultimately. Oh, God, such a strong word. but I think that is one of the failures, is that people presume hybrid events mean that everything's recorded and live stream and everything's virtual and present in person. But that's just not the case. You basically need to add digital elements to take some of that in-person event and make it virtual. I mean, one thing we did is we published podcasts from sessions on our conference. That's a form of hybridization, essentially, and it's just a way of using it in an effective way. In terms of some of the other trends, I mean, one of the other ones, I mean, email marketing continued to dominate.
It always does.
I mean, that was, to be honest, I had to fulfill a certain word count. But I mean, it's almost a given. I would have been shocked if email marketing slumped. It doesn't really happen. Mm-hmm. And gaming for good, I think we said it would finally find its feet. That's what I said in 2021 as well. Mm. And I don't think it happened in 2021, but I do think it happened in 2022. I think so many charities suddenly feel empowered to actually... I mean, the example is gaming across borders. I think the prize fund's $10 million.
Blimey.
It's huge.
Yeah.
And so many charities are now involved or getting involved in gaming for good that it ceased to become a sort of fringe fundraising alternative and has become something that's kind of pivotal to a lot of fundraising streams and will continue to be so as we watch the cost of living crisis emerge. The cost of giving crisis is consequential of that. Mm-hmm. And I think what will happen is a lot of little charities will look for new income streams, diversifying their income, and gaming for good in terms of fundraising income is just an obvious go-to.
Yeah.
I think there was a stigmatism against gaming for good, but the idea of gaming as a whole, because I think there was a lot of, you know, in the early 2000s as such, it was always the bad behaviours you'd get from playing video games. And obviously now I don't think anyone really thinks that way, especially because there's not just violence in games anymore. There's a lot of variety there, but I think people are getting past that. And I think the rise of it in the industry also followed the rise of the dominance of Twitch and other streaming platforms. And I know it would be interesting to follow that because I know Twitch is a not a struggling platform, but it is, its popularity is dwindling at the moment.
Did YouTube take over a bit?
I think YouTube started biting the market again, but I think it was also to do with there was a lot of change in policy at Twitch about how certain funds were being sent out, not charity-wise, but to the streamers. Yeah. And some people started moving platforms. So it's one of those that I think will be very interesting to see how that pans out over the next year. But I think it's good that people are finally being like, yeah, let's do this, let's have some fun with it, because I think it's a really good, fun way to fundraise as well.
Definitely.
We didn't really touch on AI at all there, but I guess that's partly because it's a difficult subject.
Other than this bare minimum, and this is where I think charities need to overcome this, and to be honest, the business world as well, is like most of artificial intelligence is embraced on that very low level. And what I think, i.e. chatbots, really. And I think when people talk about artificial intelligence, they think on those lines, like natural language processing and so on and so forth. But what essentially... Yes, you should start small, but you should go further than that small first step. And I think what we see with a lot of charities is ultimately, yes, let's embrace it, let's do chatbots, but they don't seem to go further from there. And again, actually, there's so many things that artificial intelligence can do. We have articles on it. And what I would suggest is just finding out what's sufficient for you, what you need automating, really. And artificial intelligence will come to that. Also, on automation, if you're thinking about what you should automate, find the most menial, annoying, difficult tasks you do that makes no sense and that you wish you didn't have to do, and that's what you should automate. It's the same with anyone. I mean, the reason data entry is so tedious is because, you know, it's boring, it's repetitive. They're the tasks you should automate, and they're the tasks that are actually always best to be automated.
Yeah, because they can be, and they're taking you away from what you actually want to do, which is deliver impact for your communities, right? Yeah. So you don't want to be spending your time processing loads of data when you could be actually doing other stuff.
it's a difficult one as well for automation within charities, because I think a lot of the time charities are reluctant to automate because they feel that they should spend money on service users.
Yeah.
But the automation itself is a justifiable expense.
Yeah.
Because you will get more time to have that impact.
I agree.
So it pays for itself.
Yeah.
That's a case you need to make to the board or you need to make to trustees, and that's on you. But ultimately, you know, almost all examples you see across the sector where automation has taken place, we've seen the rewards arrive.
Yeah, I think automation and AI is one of those things that the marketing world are definitely diving headfirst into more. And I know that marketing and fundraising do kind of go hand in hand. So there is a bit of a... I can almost defend this trend because I know that definitely it's one of those things that people scare. But I think it's also one of those things that people use all the time and don't even realize they're using it. If you're using Facebook or AdWords, I guarantee you there's some element of your campaigns which is being pushed forward by artificial intelligence. They are working out how all your advertising campaigns can be better at all times towards your goals. And it's one of those things that I've spoken to a few people who say they don't use automation or any AI. And I'm like, well, do you use this? And I'm like, well, they're like, yes. And I'm like, well, you are in your own little way. So... But there's loads, as you've just mentioned, there's loads of different ways that people can use this, and we write about it all the time. So, people do more.
Yeah.
People do more.
Go on the website.
Well, I was just looking at an article about automation. It was a small charity that, it's a church charity, and they were saying that they got so much more time to dedicate to the rest of other projects, and how they sold it to their boss was just being like, this is how much time I will get back. And now they're like, they're not just the accounting person, they're getting to do all sorts of service delivery. So I think that's great. So yeah, sorry, I've just reiterated what you both said, but there we go.
Summed so it was nicely. A trend, that's what we're trying to say. is there anything this year that a trend or a theme that you saw that almost surprised you and you didn't see coming? You don't have to answer it, because it's difficult when we live in a world where a lot of traditional fundraising is the norm. But were there any sort of elements that you didn't see coming?
Do you know what? I think QR codes have grown a lot more than I ever thought they would. My mum and dad know what a QR code is. That's insane. So I would say different ways of fundraising have become so much more normalised.
Yeah, I think that's a really good example, actually. I was just thinking about when I was walking down the high street the other day and I saw a poster, I think it was for Shelter, and it had a QR code on it. And I've just out of interest, because I feel like it almost feels like a kind of like futuristic way to get information, doesn't it? I know that we've spoken in quite great lengths in the past about people using it for payment systems, but for just to get information to users as quick as possible for donations is something we're seeing a lot more of, definitely.
100%.
I think broadly that was another trend, is like stuff like when I saw that there was contactless payment devices on walls that allowed you to donate to homeless people, I thought that was a very like progressive thing, and I thought it would actually, we'd see a lot more of that, and I didn't see a lot of it. And another thing that I haven't seen as much of as I thought, I know this isn't answering your question, it's almost directly not answering your question, but the other thing was stuff like blockchain, and like, so you could have additional transparency in donations. The example we often use is St. Mungo's working with a platform that worked on Ethereum, which is Alice was the platform name, and they basically had these, they basically allowed people who donated to see where their money was going at every step of the way, which is a sort of functionality that's available with blockchain. And I saw that and thought, well, that's so progressive and such a perfect way to retain donors. It's good for the charity. If you're doing the right thing, you can show where your money's going and show the donors where their money's going. It's mutually beneficial, and it's beneficial for service users too, because there's transparency and accountability, and they can then, it just boosts trust for every party. And truthfully, those stories are few and far between. I haven't seen many others. And that kind of, that's a trend that I really think would be hugely beneficial to everyone in the charity sector, particularly when money is tight, particularly at times like this, where you could show where every pound, every penny is spent, and yet haven't seen a bigger uptake. I hope that that's a trend for next year. And I hope for the sake of the charity sector, for the sake of charities and service users and communities. So
I think those charities taking the step forward with gaming for good should definitely think about that as well, because cryptocurrency, blockchain, NFTs and such is such a huge part of the gaming community. When you start entering those forums and Reddit and such, it's almost, you know, they're talking about video games and crypto. So I think that's a key, as you mentioned.
Although NFTs, I'm not sure. Laura's convinced they're a scam, I think.
Don't quote me on that.
It's just a PNG image that you can buy. Do you want to get into that? You can get into it.
I was just going to say, but I think that's the problem. It's an education piece, right? I don't know a lot about cryptocurrency, and therefore I'm not going to in any way like embrace that. I'm waiting to see what happens. And I think that's the stage that charities are currently at. Yes, there are really great signs. The donation level tends to be higher for cryptocurrencies because, well, they just do. I think there's lots of opportunities there, but I can see why charities have waited at the moment.
Yeah, I think that's scary. More pertinent initially to NFTs. The crypto's going for a bad rap at the minute, and but crypto has been around for a long time. But NFTs are relatively new. And to be honest, when Laura said all those things, I don't think they're a scam. I understand her point of view, and I understand the reluctance in the sector.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't say that. But crypto, I can see, is there should be more enthusiasm, I think, broadly with working with cryptocurrency than, for example, NFTs.
There are lots of charities that do accept cryptocurrency, RNLI do, I believe, and there's countless others, really. We're seeing it. The uptake is still quite slow on it. Yeah. I get that. Yeah,
I think we also see an interest in it, because it's quietly, without any marketing, one of our growing pieces on Charity Digital, as we always see organically people are making their way to our cryptocurrency articles.
Yeah, interestingly as well, the NFTs were once like that, and now that's gone down, which I think is a consequence of the immediate fad-like enthusiasm that we saw for NFTs that has dissipated over recent months. At the beginning of the year, it was a big thing. It was like, oh, are these the future? And then I think it's dwindled to the point that everyone's like, no, they're not.
So they're looking back over the last year, are there any other kind of fundraising campaigns you want to bring into light, or things that were learned from them? And also, what are the lessons that charities can learn from them?
One campaign that really interested me was Charity Water. They ran a campaign for World Water Day 2022, where they launched an initiative to raise awareness about the dirty water crisis, which was called The True Colors of Dirty Water. On Instagram, different colors of water flashed on screen in a video in which users were invited to basically screenshot what their color was. And when you clicked through the website, you could see go to the color section and read stories of people all over the world who had to drink that color water. And I think it just... it's effective for several reasons, but the primary reason is it puts you in a certain position where you sort of recognize your easy privilege and you recognize your luxury of just having transparent water and realize that other people, service users who Charity Water aim to help, don't have that luxury, don't have that privilege. I think that's always good when you're putting any campaign that can develop an emotional connection with an audience by showing them their luxury, their privilege, and just demonstrating that other people don't have that level of fortune is always effective. So that that one was particularly innovative, I thought.
Yeah, definitely.
I think it's good. It's almost its own way of transparency as well, isn't it? Because it's really, in a really quite adventurous way, that's not the right word, but you know what I mean, showing what they're doing and the exact areas they're going to be helping different things. I really like that.
Yeah, I mean, it reminded me of, there was a, we were talking about, was it AI, I suppose, when there was a campaign a few years ago when you could actually, they'd had a chatbot that would talk to your Alexa or your, what you call those things, the, you know, like, hey, Google, and the person, you would basically get through to an AI that would talk to you about what they were doing. I can't remember the campaign, but it was literally that the service user was who you discussed to. There was an advert and you would say, yeah, I will talk to them, and you would talk to someone who was, and a lot of charities have done that with chatbots where they've actually had chatbots that are the service users. So you essentially talk to someone who is, you know, obviously it's not the literal person, but it's someone who is supposedly going through that, so you can get a real sense of what they're going through.
I really like that.
Food bank charity. And their cost of living appeal, I think it's a classic case of a charity knowing exactly where its services need to be and the conversations it needs to be in. And what I really liked about this is that it had two ways. So if you go on their homepage, it has the big banner for the cost of living appeal and it says donate, but underneath it also says write to your MP. And I think it's recognising that there's also lots of power that charities can do for raising awareness that will also, like lobbying, essentially, that can also have such an impact. So people might not be, especially when you're talking about the cost of living crisis, people might not necessarily be able to donate, but they can email their MP. And so I think having those dual call to actions is, I think it was really very clever, to be honest. I think it seems simple, but I was impressed.
I think that's really good. The sort of serving up fundraising and impact in the same hand.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, that's really good. I think especially we've discussed at great lengths how charities need to adapt to the cost of living crisis. Yeah. And if you can help increase impact for your organisation without even asking for money, that's rather brilliant.
Yes. I also think it's a great example of user journey on a website as well. So user journey has become huge. Like they're regularly some of our most... Well, my most read articles on the site.
No ones are terrible.
That is not what I meant. But yeah, so I think that user journeys are becoming such a huge thing. But having that right at the top, I mean, we've seen from our own site that like the top of the site is it gets a fair lot of traffic. Clear signposting helps. So hopefully it's helped with their appeal as well. I was just very impressed.
To put into perspective for the audience listeners, when Laura's talking about user journeys, she's talking about the designing of how a user will move through your website as a journey so that you can get them to where you need them to be in as comfortably as possible and the least clicks as possible.
Yeah. Thank you. That was actually really helpful.
But yes, excellent. I think that's a really good example. But it is Christmas, so we have to talk about Christmas. We have to talk about fundraising, actually. All right. So are there any really good campaigns that you've seen this year that you think people can learn from?
Yeah, so my one example I had was the Christmas Dinner Game by RNID. It's just about how basically families can come together and celebrate, but for deaf people and those with hearing loss or tinnitus, it can be exhausting trying to follow dinner table conversations, essentially. So the RNID, the National Hearing Loss Charity, created the game, this game, which aims to not only include deaf people in those conversations and those games, but also basically help others understand and become more deaf aware, I think. And so you basically buy the game for £10 or an above donation. It raises money and also raises awareness while playing a fun game. I think that's a pretty... It's a pretty... You know, it seems almost obvious at times to do things like that, but they're not obvious at all. And if you ever try and come up with an idea like that, it always... It doesn't sort of take off, but I think that was a brilliant idea, and then one that I'm sure loads of people will buy and hopefully donate to that charity. And the other one I would say is this is one that's gone on for years, but it's Crisis and at Christmas, and I think a lot of people will be familiar with that. I've donated to them for years. My mum does, everyone does in my family, because we give it to each other as presents a lot of the time. But what I like about it, and the reason that I was so... it draws back to what I said about charity Water, is they do this incredible thing where you donate a gift of £29.07, and that's changed over the years, but includes a place to stay, Christmas dinner.
Yeah, and I love
that. A further support and access to health and well-being. And the reason I always personally liked that campaign was because it had two reasons. One, it has that personal touch. So a Christmas dinner is almost this thing. It's an abstract idea, really. It's not a concrete. There's nothing, you know, saying you should have a Christmas dinner. But a Christmas dinner is a luxury again. You know, how turkey, people have ham and nut roasts or whatever they have. Mm-hmm. And it seems extravagant and lavish at times, and I think most people are aware of that.
Yeah.
And I think when you have it, you almost feel a bit guilty. I know I do. And so I think that's why it's giving that sense of luxury, sense of normality that other people are fortunate enough to have to someone who may be homeless is a really lovely thing. And the second thing is the emphasis on long-term support, so it gives that dual appeal of, one, the personal touch, and two, the practical. So long-term support is access to health and well-being services. And I mean, even they do stuff. I know Shelter and Crisis have done stuff in the past though, on like giving haircuts and advice on CVs and everything like that. So I just think, I always thought it was a good campaign, and I think it's definitely important at this time of year particularly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Agree.
Me not to.
I actually stupidly have an Easter campaign that I think can be adapted to Christmas quite well, and it's in like you should see everyone's faces. So there was Rennie Grove Hospice Care. They did a virtual Easter egg hunt using QR codes, which I think is something you can definitely do when you're at home with all your families and things like that. So they had they provided donors with a pack of Easter egg posters with QR codes to create virtual hunts. So each egg had a unique QR code to scan, and it came up with a riddle for where the next one was hidden.
Ooh.
And I just think that's fun. And quizzes are such a good thing.
Chasing Santa,
yeah,
version of that.
Oh my god, that's genius, Nick.
You have to find the presents.
That is a much better idea than Rudolph Nora suggested, which was an Easter egg hunt at Christmas. Just to be sure.
Excuse me, but like
I feel like I did this in a local park.
Right?
Yeah, there was a QR codes in Brixton. There was Easter eggs. This was at
QR
Easter.
QR codes.
To be sure again.
To be sure.
Yeah.
To be sure.
Because Easter egg hunt at Christmas is not something I've often heard of.
It would be a bold fundraising move.
Yeah.
I actually think
it could be find the Christmas puddings.
That's the advice I give. Do Easter fundraising at Christmas so people are so confused they just give you money.
I'm just saying.
It would make headlines. Wouldn't it?
It's seasonal and it's nice, okay? I just think it's an interesting one. You can do something a bit more fun for your Christmas party.
You can adapt it for Christmas, I agree. I think you could definitely do some sort of fine reindeer's red nose or something like that.
Oh my god,
you know,
to guide them through
the snow. Guide them through, they can't see without it.
So you got that one for free, guys. My pleasure.
And for all our listeners, I just want to say Happy Easter.
There are also lots of, I really like those local charities that do Amazon wish lists.
Oh, I really
and
like that,
they're
yeah.
such, like the Giving Tree ones, I think they're so great. And they're a different way of getting involved, aren't they? Because you can buy the actual book that someone wants or the like whatever's on the list. And I think there's loads of those. So you should look for like local charities that do those. They're great.
I think, so for some of the ones that I've really enjoyed, I've been hit with Shelter campaigns a lot this Christmas season. I found all of their marketing to be very powerful. But one thing I really like what they do, and it's almost an element of transparency as well, is that one of the key things that when you go to their site, they say donate £48. You say, what's that? That's a very bizarre amount to donate, but they basically point out that £48 could enable a legal advisor to complete an application for illegal aid funding. And I think that really, really hits home because it gives you the exact amount, even though it's a weird amount, and it feels realistic as well. I know that I've seen fundraising campaigns in the past where they say something like £1 will achieve this, and you just know it won't. It'll help towards something. But a specific amount almost feels like you're paying for something directly, and I thought that was one I really enjoyed. Another one I really enjoyed, it's a bit silly, but I really enjoyed the NSPCC's. They kind of took the whole marathons in the summer, but we'll do a family walk in the winter where everyone dresses up as Christmas-related things. I mean, it's happening on the 21st of December, but essentially, yes, they're expecting families to sort of come together, do a long walk together in Christmas T-shirts and such to raise money. And I think that's quite a nice switch up for the season. Yeah. I think also you get the fact that if it's a walk, you can get families involved, the whole of them, instead of just those fit enough to run 5K or work towards it. And I think that's a really nice thing to do. I think it's almost like that the whole of you and your Easter eggs adapting it for a different season, because I think marathons are fundamentally always seen as a summer thing.
Yeah.
And this is a spin on that for the winter, and I think that was quite a cool idea, that.
I do like that. That's lovely, especially everyone's, you know, together. I think that's a lovely idea.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
I think one thing that I think we do here at Charity Digital, which is more, we obviously this is not for us to raise funds, but I think it's something that charities could try and do more of, is that for our Secret Santa, we have a policy here where we all, obviously as normal, we pull a name out of a hat and then we go, but we have to buy ours directly from specific charities. And I don't know if that's something that charities can take advantage of, especially the ones with their online shops and such, to sort of push out people in the local community to say, do Christmas Secret Santa shopping here and get businesses involved and get other organizations involved in your local area to do so, because I think it's just another thing that could raise a lot of money, and it makes those presents, even if they're rubbish, they have value, extra value to them, don't they?
I was gonna say I've adopted that with my friendship group, because we were buying each other tat and it's so much nicer to think you're giving back while you're also buying something, and I think it's a really nice way of embracing a nice habit to have.
You get tasks still, but it has impact.
I don't think you ever get these mind blowing gifts in
You never
Santa
do.
Anyway, it's £10, and £10 goes a lot further in a charity shop than it does it.
Exactly.
For example, Prada.
It's also you can What's also be example? A bit more creative. Do you know what I mean? It's so nice. Like, I really enjoyed the charity shop element. Yeah, I really loved our Secret Santa last
Nora
year.
Last year, for context, and she ruined it. I think she cried.
She did. She cried.
I did not cry.
She cried several times throughout the night.
Yeah. Can I also just say, Age UK do really great Christmas campaigns, don't they? Because they, obviously Christmas can be a hard time if you're feeling lonely, and they always do a loneliness winter campaign. And they do an advice line as well that they got, apparently had over 30,000 calls last year. And so they ask for volunteers as well as donations, which I think is nice.
Yeah, definitely. And on volunteering, just another point is always... think about where you... I volunteered once in shelter, I believe, and there was too many people there. It was an interesting one, because people tend to volunteer for homeless charities again at that time of year, and then I got sent home, not for misbehaviour, but just because there were so many people who had volunteered at that time of year. So if you are planning on doing some volunteering around Christmas, it's always good to think about who might actually need it and who's lacking volunteers. So also for charities, if you do need more volunteers, give a call out on socials and let people know.
Yeah, and if you, I would think, to combat the situation you were in, plan for overcapacity, I guess. There's something you can just get people to do on the side that doesn't really help. I think after all those examples, there's a lot to be learned from different charities over this the Christmas period. So I think that's probably a good time to wrap up. So just thank you to everybody who's been listening today. Have a absolutely splendid holiday season. And we'll see you at the next podcast, where we talk about what's coming up next year for fundraising. Ooh. Have a lovely day, everybody. Thank you for listening.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this Charity Digital podcast. The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed are those of the speakers and do not represent the views, thoughts, and opinions of Charity Digital. The material and information presented here is for general information purposes only. Thanks for listening.